So what we've I've just started to look at really in this last meditation is the work really of the klipot, of working with the klipot. Now in actual fact, we've been working with versions of the klipot all along the way. Klipot, the word for klipot really means that which obscures. It's a word in Hebrew. The Hebrew root is something that's like a covering over, a place of resistance. We could say a place of refusal. So in a certain sense, the internal dialogue, the patterns that constrict us, the places where we're pulled out of shape, these are all klipa. These are all aspects of the klipot. And you may or may not consciously know much about the klipot, you already have an enormous amount of experience in working with it. And at a certain point, that there's as the capacity to embody the divine name, the capacity to work with the light increases, there is the opportunity then to work with more directly with the klipot as archetypal forms, which is work that we've just made a little start in. Now, one of the images that the thing we have to remember with the Tree of Life in particular really is this shape. It's like the ultimate systems diagram, which really is designed to help our minds and our feelings and our imaginations focus on elements of self and the universe. So the Tree of Life gives us the sense of the universe in balance and the outer universe is working well together, the conversation happening well. The Tree of Death, on the other hand, so the reason I called my book The Tree of Life and Death, is the Tree of Death shows us the tree working in distortion, working out of balance, working as a shadow tree. And you might say, well, why do we have to look at that at all? Why don't we just concentrate on the light? Well, we can do, but there is actually an usefulness in working with the energies of shadow, and working with them in relationship to the balance energies. Now, partly it's useful to do it because they exist within us. They certainly exist in the world. So anyone who's looking at what's going on in Israel at the moment, it's just there. And so the capacity to be centered in light and work with disturbance is an important aspect of being a human being. That said, it's not for everybody, and we will touch it in this course. You might do that and then never do it again, or like me, it's something I've worked with all my life and it's kind of interesting if you do concentrate on it. And sort of, I was talking the other day with somebody I supervise who gets to go to all kind of interesting and romantic places. In the days when I used to travel for work, there were really only two places I went. I went there a lot. So I went to, obviously, Israel, which I've been to mostly. The other place I've worked in is South Africa. Both places with a lot of disturbance, and in a certain sense, when I think about it, there's probably I think, why don't I ever get ready to go anywhere easy? And of course, the reason I wouldn't go anywhere easy is actually because this is what I'm interested in. This is what my work is about. It is about working with disturbance. So when I'm working in South Africa, working at the, if I think of some of the work in South Africa that's been about working not just with the white on black apartheid, but Zulu versus Bushman apartheid, many, many layers of black and white racism and white on white racism, and Boers and Anglos, there's a whole, a lot of the work that I've done there has been concerned with the very real beauty and power and the disturbance in that culture. Israel, of course, as you know, I've done much more work in Israel than I've went there over nearly 20 years. And I've done a lot of work in Jerusalem, outside Jerusalem, where things have got lost, energies have got lost and stuck. And certainly there's been a lot of klipotic energies there. And having an understanding of the klipot, having a way to kind of relate to what is that, you know, what does happen when energy becomes disturbed, which is and the shadow. That's what the point of the shadow tree is. In the same way that the tree of life helps us look at the kind of the feel like the underneath mechanisms, the underneath relationship behind apparent things in balance and when they're operating well, the shadow tree really helps us also understand well how do things kind of get messed up and what happens when they're messed up. Now the entrance image to the in the crypt is a carved door with two human-headed serpents tangled up in each other, with many other serpentine forms again entangled, arising out of that, making all and underneath it somewhere is the shape of the tree of life. Now the tree of life is the fundamental, if you like, the fundamental form around which the universe and ourselves are built. So within and underneath everything that happens is this tree of balance and beauty and light. But that becomes obscured, overlaid, and elaborated on top of, so that sense of constant conversation and harmony, in which face beholds face in an act of love and beauty, no longer is seen, and that is obscured and lost and drowned in complication, drowned in external kind of feelings, complicated kind of energies. There's lots of different ways of describing the klipot, in which I'll look at some of them this afternoon. But one of the very important kind of paper, really, which I've quoted in the book, by the Rabbi Isaac HaKohen, who writes something called the Treatise on the Left Animation. Now, the left animation is a term used in the Judaic Kabbalah, and it's got this idea of the righteous being on the right-hand side and the wicked being on the left. So this would be the Treatise on Wickedness and on the nature of wickedness. And what Rabbi Isaac would want us to contemplate, first of all, when he gets us to imagine the entrance into the contemplation of the nature of wickedness, is he gives us an alternative Adam and Eve. So in the sense of the Torah as it stands, the beginning of Genesis really is the divine creating Adam and Eve, who are partners, who balance each other, who are the male and female kind of roots of all creativity, and this is, in a certain sense, they are the beings who live in the Garden of Eden, live around the Tree of Life, and whose creativity and life energy generates the life of the garden. Similarly, we are in the Averse tree, we have Samael and Lilith. Now, I want to be clear, really, about how these forms are understood, because there's been a lot of feminist writing about rehabilitating Lilith as a Canaanite goddess. And that's good writing, and that's interesting writing about how feel like deities of older cultures are demonized by later cultures. But when in the Kabbalah we're talking about Lilith, we're not talking about an old Canaanite goddess. The forms that are used in the Kabbalah are specific to the Kabbalah and up and have their own precision somewhere. So we have these two forms, Samael, who is the masculine form, and who is called the liar and the deceiver, who mixes everything together and pollutes everything by mixing everything together, and who embodies the energy of seduction. Lilith is called the night hag, the mother who kills babies, who destroys life. So in place of the, archetypal masculine and feminine, in a sense, in place of Chokmah, the archetypal masculine, Bina, the archetypal feminine, we're given these figures of Samael and Lilith. Now, in Bina is the source of the non-dual love, who delights in all that she gives birth to and loves. The averse image of this is Lilith, who is the mother who loathes the emergence of new life, and poisons the wells of life and destroys whatever emerges. Chokmah, which is the Adam figure, which is the clarity of the will that focuses and generates new life in a focused, clear kind of way, is paralleled by Samael, the liar, the deceiver, the seducer, who mixes everything up so that it becomes confused. So it's an analog. There is an analog of the dementia of the klepotic form of Chokmah. So the doorway into the klepot, and both our own internal klepot and the external klepot, is formed by these averse principles, which are about seducing and mixing everything together, and lying and deceiving, and the desire to destroy life. Now this is an image and this tangled serpent image is an image that comes ultimately out of ancient Egypt, and it's the serpent Apep with its many heads and coils, who's constantly trying to stop the boat of Ra moving through the night to create the new day, and is also continually entangling and seducing the figures who work on the side of Ra to confuse them and to bring and again to bring motion to an end. So the intention of Samael, the intention of Lilith, is in a way to create that set of circumstances which Charles Williams describes in his poem as pollu, this place without the stagnant swamp, without any life, without any boundaries, where there is no distinctiveness. And the image on the door, the entrance image on the door, has these two figures as entangled serpents, and then with many more entanglements coming out of that. Now, where that door takes us to is the abyss. And the abyss has all kinds of many ways of exploring the abyss, working with it, healing it, transforming beings who are trapped within the abyss. But the nature of the abyss, in a sense, is it is a break, it is a disjuncture, it is a broken place. And what is in that place are unfinished forms, lost forms, confused forms, everything that is broken, and it is the task of this, of certain aspects of certain Kabbalists, and not just Kabbalists, but spiritual workers of whatever kind, to enter into the abyss, to find the lost and to bring them home. It is effectively the work of the Good Shepherd, So when we in the Good Shepherd Psalm, the descent into the abyss, in a sense, is the valley of the shadow of death. It is the place that the Good Shepherd goes into to find the lost sheep and return the lost sheep to the bundle of the living. So it's based upon the attempt to do this is based upon a profound confidence in the ability of the energies of light to redeem and return everything into the bundle of the living. Now, so the very first thing that happens to us when we contemplate that door and open that doorway is we come in to relationship into an environment that is like a ruined sanctuary. So it's the clipotic reflection of the sanctum sanctorum. So it's a bit imagining that sanctum as if it's been desecrated. There are unfinished. So in place of the coherence and the luminescence and the sense of the universality of the divine spirit, here there is a sort of this shadowiness, spookiness, unfinished forms, broken things. And then they will have presented themselves to you in whatever way whatever way you have perceived them. And what we're doing really, really what Ernest Butler would advise us to do, is we fill ourselves with light, and then we take a little glimpse into, we take a little step into, a direct step into these more disturbed and lost places. We bring the light in whatever way we do, whether it's in the Rob staff or by speaking the name or offering some sense of goodness and blessing into a place that is lost and desecrated. And then we return, carefully closing and sealing the door when we return. So that's the basic kind of process. And in the preparatory process to that, we've really explored the power of our nature, the expansiveness of our nature. We've linked ourselves with the divine through the sanctuary. And in a sense, as the bearer of the name, Yud-Heh-Shin Vav-Heh, the bearer of the healing name, we step into places that are not holy, that have become desecrated. Now, Rabbi HaKohen, who writes the treatise on the left animation, really speaks of this work about the Klipot as being a profound mystery, as being the work of great prophets. And he's using hyperbole a bit here. He's saying that this is an important work. The disability, that those who understand this work, who work with this, will understand very deeply the holiness of evil. Now again, it's that very paradoxical thing. He says, for example, that the quality of jealousy and envy and the desire to spoil things that comes out of Samael and the desire to deny life of Lilith is actually arises also from the divine source. But he says this is normally too great a mystery for created beings to understand. But it is by doing this work, by this work of uniting this, this particular work then that addresses this problem is to bring that which denies life into life, to hold that which is constantly jealous and lying and raging against life and trying to mix everything up into clear relationship and unity and balanced unity is the heart of the mystery. It's called Sodha Abur, the secret of uniting and combining that which has become mixed up and lost. And within that is the possibility of the redemption of both Samael and Lilith. Now, he uses a very particular form, which we won't do too much of this time anyway. He works with an angelic form called Mazukiel. And Mazukiel is an archangel who is connected with the whole process of duality itself. Mazukiel's name means the screen that divides. And it's Mazukiel's task is to create separation within which there can be union. So they, in dealing with the Klipot, whether inside ourselves or with others, there's the principle of creating separation and the clarity of that, which in some level is a bit like wearing a hazmat suit if you're in a dangerous environment, so you are filled with light, you do not mix yourself with it. And so you create the containment, the bounding, the shaping, and then this disturbed thing is drawn into you safely, so that it passes through your form into the divine. We're not going to be doing anything like that soon, or maybe even not even at all in this course. We'll see where we get on. But what we're doing at this point is just starting to address some of these ideas, and I'm looking at that principal practice of being able to hold and bound, and then unite with. So this is really, and the archangel Mazukiel really is an angel who helps us do this. Now, there's lots of different forms, ways of investigating this territory. One interesting form is given in the idea of the seven hells and heavens. So I'm just going to describe so this is a way of looking at the universe. It's connected to the Tree of Life, but it's not. And connected to the seven sephirot of creation, and it's used in this work as a way of looking at the opposite. So we're taking the principle of Mazukiel, which is to divide, to clearly understand the difference between a balanced place and a disturbed place. And having understood that, then we bring them together. So we work with duality, unity, Sodha Abur, the secret of combining. Now, the seven heavens begin, first of all, they begin with the heavens of the supernals, which is called Arabot. Arabot is called the desert or the empty place. It's sometimes described as a mixture of fire or water, or like the sea of glass mixed with fire that you find in the book of Revelation. It's again this place of great expanse, great emptiness, and the opposites working together, the sea of water and fire. So this is like the highest heaven that you find in the world of the supernals. The next one is the heaven of Hesed, or the heaven of Gedula, which is called Makon. It's got the meaning of a changeless, prosperous place, a thriving neighborhood of goodness and good relationships. Makon in Hebrew means the neighborhood, just in contemporary Hebrew. So the sense here is of the sense of that of the energy of Gedula, the kindness, creating an environment where people are kind and loving and prosperous and generate goodness with each other. The heaven of Gevura is called Ma'on, which means a strong refuge, and it's like a fortress where you would be safe. The heaven of Tiferet is called Zebul, which is a place that is like a centered place, a place of beauty and centeredness, that would be the fulcrum around which other things would grow. The heaven of Netzach is called Shechachim. It's called the cloud of mystery, and it's got the image of a cloud where there's mist and sweet rain dropping. It's also called the place of fountains and living gardens. The heaven of Hod is called Arekiah, the place that is like a golden canopy, or a place filled with beautiful dwellings or beautiful tents. And the heaven of Yesod and Malchut, which is combined in this, is called a Velon Shemain, the veil of the heavens, the place where we see through matter, we see the beauty of the heavens. So much for the heavens. The hell of the supernals, the reflection, if you like, in the supernal, in the shadow tree of the supernal heaven of Arabot, is called Sheol, the deepest hell, sometimes called the grave, sometimes called the house of the devouring mother. So in place of the if you like, the beauty of the expansiveness of the desert and the opposites at peace, we have this sense that is the a deep pit without life, and whatever life there, if there is any life there, it would devour life. The hell of Gedula is called Abaddon, the place of destruction, or the bottomless pit. So in place of the kind of the lovely neighborhood, there's a bottomless pit that you will just keep falling into. The hell of Geburah is called Bashachoth, the pit of ruin and destruction. The hell of Tiferet is called Titayaven, which is the quagmire. Hell of Netzach is called Share Mavat, the gate of the grave. Hell of Hod is Zevel Mabet, the valley of the shadow of the grave. Hell of Yesod and Malchut is called Gehenna or Gehonim, which is the ravine of the discarded, the rubbish pit. So if we're following the instruction of the Archangel Mauskiel, what we learn to do, first of all, is we learn to work with the heavens and the hells. So we've had a little kind of glimpse in that meditation, in descending into the place called Gehenna, the ruined place, the place of discards. So in order to, first of all, work properly with duality, we have to feel in our own nature that sense of Gehenna, that sense of the discarded, to contemplate the discarded in our life, the discarded in a collective life, the place where we reject things and abandon. And also that place where we ourselves can feel like the rejected, unfinished, exiled thing. Now that is in relationship with Velon Shemain, the veil of the heavens, so that the apparently discarded, unfinished, unattractive thing is also simultaneously. So we have to see it clearly, know it for what it is, but also we are invited to consider that this might also be a veil which shows us the nature of the heavens. So in a certain sense, if we consider those things we don't like thinking about, don't want to bring into relationship, let's imagine Donald Trump for a moment. So we bring, if I bring Trump to mind right now, I feel disgust, I want to push away, I think about something else again. What the hell do you always have to think about that man? You know, the whole other stuff that comes up in me. So, but if I can, without romanticizing, without kind of making Trump any different from the way he is, without romanticizing my own reactions to Trump and including those in the process, if I can stay present in that, there is a way in which Trump becomes a doorway a way in which the veil can draw back, in which I can see something about the deeper nature of the universe and the deeper nature of the divine. Now, it's horrible work. It's a bit like, actually, don't like it, rather not. But actually, there is a real kind of benefit that comes out of that. Because rather than immediately pushing away that which I don't like, casting it out, I start to gather in. I start to gather life into the great bundle of the living. I start to develop a stamina and a capacity of heart and presence that enables me to do that without being overwhelmed.
Can you give us a little example of how you've done that?
Well, I've just done it. I've just explained it. Trump.
I mean, you've taken an aspect of Trump.
Well, that's what I was just describing, right? So as I look into that aspect of Trump, one of the things that comes, so I have to tolerate the disgust, but one of the things that I see through is a capacity to disrupt. But the other more important thing, actually isn't really my getting a clever insight, it's my ability to embrace Trump, my capacity without pretending, without making him any more attractive than he is, to allow him to exist alongside me. To not banish him out of my universe. So that's the most important quality about this, where we allow ourselves to therefore to be in relationship, and therefore for the possibility of some kind of conversation to happen, which as it deepens can take us into some very kind of interesting kind of places. So this is the beginning practice, and it's a very profound practice of working with the hell of Gehenna. You know, if we were going to, and we're really looking there at this whole, you know, this is the hell of Malchut Yesod, right? So we're looking at the kind of the images that we prefer, and we're really looking at this quality of I want this, I don't want that, and we're really having to look at the Samuel and Lilith within ourselves as we start to engage and get clearer about how we mix things up and how we deny the expression of life. You know, if we were to look at the next heaven and hell, if you look at the hell of Hod, which is called Svel Mehet, the valley of the shadow of the grave. So there we might, and if we connect that with Rekia, the place that is like the golden canopy, the place that is where there is some protection. Now the valley of the shadow of the grave, which is the valley of the shadow of death found in the Good Shepherd Psalm, is the place where we find the lost aspects that have gone that have gone further out even from the discard place, where they're just, oh, I just don't want them there. This is things that I do not want to live. And it's not just about me, these are the collective forms, right? So things that are energies that, or things that are not wanted, that are cast further and further away. The basic principle really of the hells is the principle of the abyss, of things that are pushed further and further and further away, out of consciousness, out of it, into absence. But of course, from behind the scenes, always pressing back into, in a certain sense, the demons are always arising out of the pit. Because they have life, they have energy, they have their own directionality, but they are fragmented, they are not connected to the living tree. They're part of the broken tree of shadows. So they come, they erupt, They create wars, they create havoc between people, they create havoc inside people. And what we're doing, in the sense of rather being driven from behind, we turn our face in that direction and enter into dialogue. So in a sense, you know, if we brought together the Valley of the Shadow of the Grave with the Golden Canopy, we may find a place where lost souls are protected and gathered back. And similarly, if we look at the hell of Netzach, we put together the gate of the grave with the cloud of mystery and the place of living gardens. And there we have the possibility of freeing those who are imprisoned in death. If we look at the hell of Tiferet, which is the quagmire, if we unite that with the sure and centered habitation, we start to create a sense of center in the quagmire. A place where the quagmire can become sure ground. If we put the pit of destruction together with the strong refuge, we create boundary and safety in terrible, dangerous kind of times. If we mediate between the bottomless pit and the prosperous neighborhood, we create a polarity of different possibilities. If we the possibility of the vanishing of the bottomless pit, so that all are contained in prosperity and love and health. And ultimately, if we align Sheol, the deepest hell, with Arabot, the heaven of the unity of all opposites, then everything becomes transformed. Now these are training wheels, these forms. So that we don't fall off. So we're working with them in such a way as to, because we're given these shapes and this image of Maskeel and this sense of Samael and Lilith, the distorted aspects of the archetypal himmel, archetypal male, archetypal female. So we learn to start to work with division and union, Sod Ha'ibur, that there's a secret of the combination. And we do it little by little by little, but actually as we do it, we develop a kind of a stamina, a strength, a capacity to hold and to transform. So in a certain sense, we become the living alchemical stone. Now, one of the problems of this whole area, anyone who lives in Glastonbury and ever goes into courtyard books will see 30, 40 books on the shelves about the clip art. They're all normally black books with frightening goat images and Dennis Wheatley kind of images, all very, very gothic and exciting. And that's pretty much all fantasy and nonsense written by kind of people who don't have proper lives and that have too much time on their hands and want to engage in being goth boys, is mostly men. That the whole point about this work is it is really about working with that which has become lost and displaced, and ignite bringing ourselves into a sense of kindness and love and power, which enables us to meet these disturbed and lost forms and lead them home. You know, it's a work that isn't glamorous. It isn't about running off fighting black magicians or banishing demons, God forbid. You know, it's a work of inclusion, a work of welcoming into the heart whatever can be welcomed into the heart. So it's not about forcing yourself to embrace things. It's really the point about this Sada Aribu, the division and the combination, is to really be with that sense of opposites, and that's and 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 to progressively look at initially beginning with that which I discard, that which I don't want near me, and to allow that to come nearer me, and to notice what happens when I allow it to come near me, and can I allow it in some way or other to combine with me. And in a certain way, you know, there's a whole kind of, this takes us right into the quality of both will and love. So in order to do this, we have to be aligned with the divine will, and then we have to work with the quality of love. And unfortunately, the whole word love is a very complicated and mixed up word for us. Because it either has connotations of romantic love and has the connotation of I should feel love. It should be an emotion. Now, love, actually, in its deeper place, is not an emotion. Emotions are emotions, feelings are feelings, thoughts are thoughts. Love, when we look at the non-dual love of Bina, it is not an emotion. It is an energetic stance of awareness. It is the stance of inclusion, the intention to include. Now, my friend David Spang, there's this rather lovely thing. He talks about the spectrum of love, because David does a lot of work about blessing, but he's very realistic about it. And he said, well, the first aspect of love is just to allow another, is just to recognize with your attention that the other person exists. A further step might be to acknowledge they have a right to exist. A further step might be to pay attention to learn something about what their existence is like, and he sees that the notion of love as being a sort of a, if you like, a stance of consciousness where we work on a spectrum to whatever extent we can at any one point in time. Now, the problem with love, and particularly because a lot of Christian teaching of love, is it's linked also with the idea of forgiveness, and if somebody is horrible to us, we must immediately love and forgive them, which means we must feel love for somebody that we're actually bloody furious with and hurt by. And that isn't it at all. I mean, that's a complete distortion. Now, a feeling of closeness, eventually, you know, what happened even with the likes of Donald Trump, I can, if you know, when I can kind of, when I'm in the right space, and when I can feel that the lost boy underneath this extraordinary man, I can even feel some little affection for him. Not great, I'm not brilliant on Trump, but the process is one of being quite realistic, and this is where that sense of muscular sense of division comes from. You create the clear boundary, then you work up to the boundary. And by working with the boundary, by working with the spectrum in that way, eventually what happens is a clear combining. A genuine combining of opposites, a genuine of bringing the lost into the great bundle of the living. So the problem with the wish to split is this is very much the energy of Lilith, the energy to deny life, to banish something out of life so that it may never exist. The problem with the idea of seduction, romanticization, that's the energy of Samael, which doesn't want us to see clearly or to feel clearly or to think clearly. So the energy of Maskeel is the energy of both seeing clearly, creating clear division, and then through the spectrum of love, combining and returning the lost.
I had a lovely illustration of this in my work recently with a client who was being really, really obstinate and stuck and staying with it. And we've been working together for a long time. So there's the kind of safety of the love. And suddenly he went, I'm being a real ass here, with tears in his eyes. He said, I'm being a real ass here, and you're taking me seriously. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice one. Nice. Mm.
I heard a story from William Emerson, which was very, very moving, where there was a rapist who killed his women that he raped. And there was one woman who he raped, who just said, okay, rape me. No resistance to the rape. He did not kill her.
Mm.
And then William Emerson, who's very hot on shock, was called in because no one could find any shock in her body, because it's a very shocking thing to be raped,
mm-hmm.
and then probably murdered. And they could, she had some sort of open heart that stood her ground, but somehow gave this man, so he was not electrocuted or whatever, he wasn't killed by the state. Yep, that seemed a remarkable
quality that you're describing. It's somewhere she is able to, says she's able to maintain herself, that her boundary is not breached, even while her physical boundary is being breached.
And does it with such care. I don't know what the right word is, but yeah. he's moved by her enough to not kill.
Yeah.
His self-hatred is not having to be worked out on her by killing her.
Yeah,
it's a really remarkable story.
Oh, that's a remarkable story. It's interesting.
So he got taken into prison. He didn't continue with his.
Yeah, good. Mm.
Are we having a pee soon?
Hmm?
Are we having a break soon?
Yeah, we'll be having a break in quarter hour.
Oh, is it 4 o'clock?
4 o'clock, yeah.
It was supposed to be, sorry. Yeah. Could I ask something?
I know, it's supposed to be harvest 3, isn't it? Is it?
Yeah. I think so.
Oh, it is supposed to be harvest 3. Should we have a break? Yes, I am so sorry. I've flipped in my head to 4 o'clock, but actually we have been going on quite a long time, really. You're right, let's have a break for half an hour. Yep. Come back a quarter past, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Faye. I lost the plot a bit.